Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
Fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had a cheat.
Well, he never heated up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.
Hello and welcome to this week's Football Family. I am David Snaid and this is the 42's dedicated football podcast. On the morning that long-time Dublin resident Killian Murphy wakes up as an Oscar winner, I am joined by our very own leading men, Gavin Cooney and Shane Keegan. Bohemians are now searching for one of their own after Declan Devine became the first managerial casualty of the season after a 2-0 home defeat to Shelbourne left them in 7th place. But they're still 1 point above Shamrock Rovers as the champions remain winless, second from bottom following a stalemate in Sligo. Shells lead the way at the top, 2 clear of Derry in 2nd after Pat Hooban continued his fine start to the campaign with a hat-trick against Waterford. St. Pat's stopped the rot after 3 defeats on the spin to edge Dundalk 1-0. Rory Keaton's goal enough to keep Stephen O'Donnell's side rooted to the bottom of the table. There's also an interesting goalkeeper subplot to that night's action. This Thursday sees John O'Shea name his Ireland squad for a friendly with Belgium and Switzerland later this month, while there is also the fallout from the Premier League action. But we start with a little bit of breaking news, as Cork City have announced special plans to honour Killian Murphy's Oscar win. In a deeply generous move to recognise the actor, who most will of course remember as playing Dubliner John in the Dublin-based dark comedy Intermission, which showcased some of the finest Dublin talent to capture the spirit of our country's capital, of course Dublin. They will be offering free tickets to anyone with the name Killian Murphy at this Friday's home game against Bray Waters.
Oh my God.
We've lost our Cork listenership there.
And also, fair play, Gav is wearing an ugly blue top. I thought when I saw you on TV this morning, Gav, that that was given to you by wardrobe because it was just so bright. I thought it was something you had to have for morning TV.
No, not quite. It was given to me, like, all of my clothes by my girlfriend's mother, who dresses me for TV.
Spot on. Well, pass on. But where did you get it? Because it's actually very nice.
I actually think, and you might not, like, I think it's Zara. I think
I'm not going to lie, I had the bang of it. I was going to say, but I didn't want it. It's good.
Because Zara stuff, my body shape isn't right for Zara, to be honest. But this is some kind of excessively baggy shirt.
Yeah.
Which I feel, I get away with this, you know? The problem with TV, obviously, is that the camera adds 10 pounds and they've got like 4 cameras there. So, I mean, that's a lot of added weight. It's an awful pity. Did Bray do this, by the way, for anyone called Daniel Day-Lewis? I mean, are there any Day-Lewises who could pop into the Carlisle grounds for free for one of their first
videos? Saoirse Ronan from Wicklow. I think is she Wicklow?
I think so. Shane definitely doesn't know.
I have no idea. But I do. I did find your attempts to steal Cork's thunder absolutely shameless there, David. That is atrocious stuff.
Well, listen, he's Cork. He's Dublin via Cork, really, essentially. You know, his family or kids are rare there, you know. In fairness, good Dublin accent on him as well. I remember, did you actually ever watch Intermission? Did the Eaters ever watch that film?
I did, yeah. Colin Farrell, isn't it?
Yeah. My cousin's in that film. He's an extra. He's an extra in that. And I remember the two of us used it. There's a scene in it, I don't know if you've seen, where I remember with the brown sauce, with the cup of tea.
Yeah.
That's how you know they're good actors, because we tried that and it's fucking rank.
Oh, yeah. I had a friend who used to drink tomato ketchup from the bottle as well, yeah.
What?
Yeah. Disgusting stuff.
Stuff. Anyway,
he was English, so you know he had all sorts of problems.
Ah, well, there you go. I listen,
having a bit of soup.
I think there's actually some soccer to talk about apart from all this, isn't there?
Well, I was going to say, are you definitely ruling yourself out of applying for the Bowles job? Just when you think you're out, they drag you back in. But I don't know. Let's be honest, it's and obviously it's not great for Declan Devine. I don't think we really discuss it at the start of the season in terms of, oh, you know, who'd be sacked. We obviously said, but he was one of those managers who had to start the season well under pressure, considering how last season finished, not getting into Europe, losing the cup final. It's maybe a surprise that's happened now, but is it a huge shock?
Still very early. Jeez, I was surprised now. Yeah, I definitely was surprised. Okay, it didn't go wonderfully last year. He would have been better off, as often as the case with a manager, he would have been better off if their season had gone the opposite way around. So if they had a slower start and a stronger finish rather than the other way around. And then, look, the fact that they didn't really manage to make much of a game of it in the FAI Cup final meant that supporters didn't really have anything to get excited by. You know, if you'd gone down in a blaze of glory, it would probably would have resonated more with the support base. But he was still the one giving the budget in the off-season. He was still the one, you know, deciding what direction the club was going to go in this year. For all of that to go out the window this early did surprise me. Even though there's no doubt, look, results haven't been wonderful, performances haven't been wonderful. I would have thought, and look, it's probably me with the manager's hat on and saying that more loyalty should be shown to managers. I would have thought, like, you know, double figures, 10 games is the minimum that a manager should be getting before the axe drops on him. Yeah. But I don't know. I think there could be a little bit more going on to it than just the results. I would say there are maybe some fraught relationships in the background around the club, maybe between certain individuals and that. And I think that often has an awful lot to do with things. When results are tense at a club, you're either in a good position with the hierarchy or you're not in a good position with the hierarchy. And that'll decide whether you're going to get the extra time that you might need or whether you're not.
Yeah, it just feels... Obviously, the news broke yesterday afternoon. It feels hasty, if unsurprising. He's just such little credit in the bank with supporters, given how last season ended. And like from, you know, the midpoint of the league onwards, really. And then you've got the complicating factor that the Pat Fenlon's the director of football there, and he didn't appoint Declan Devine. So you think, like, that's obviously the director of football's key appointment is always the head coach. So, you did wonder, is he on thin ice there? But I think this is also a testament to the strength of Waterford and to Galway coming up. You know, there's like they both those sides have made good starts. Obviously, Waterford took a bit of a thumping in Derry, but like that gives clubs jitters. Like there's no, you can't fall back on the fact that UCD are there and they'll finish bottom. And okay, worst case scenario, if things go absolutely disastrously, we'll still have a playoff to secure our Premier Division status. So I do wonder if that kind of had fingers a quiver on the trigger, etc. But I also don't think it speaks well to like how Bozeman run generally. The Devine has gone after only 4 or 5 matches into the league season. Like you say, Shane, if you're going to make this decision in the first month of the season, why not make it before the season starts? Get a manager in for the off season and, you know, tailor the recruitment to him. And I think, you know, Bose have, you know, okay, the attacking play hasn't always been great, but I think there's been flashes of good attacking play under Devine. I think what's killed him is defensively. And I think a lot of the defensive issues is down to recruitment. You know, like they're still having issues at right back after Andy. And Andy Lyons has been gone for years at this point.
Yeah.
And they've had issues at centre back. Obviously, they're unlucky with Rob Cornwell getting injured. But like they left themselves so short. And like then they signed like 3 centre backs on the same day a few weeks ago. Like that sounds like panic to me.
But that was deadline, wasn't it? Like how many players was it? 4 or 5 players in the one day?
So.
Wasn't it a striker, midfielder as well?
Like that strikes to panic and a lack of kind of joined up thinking. And obviously, I think did Jordan Flowery start at centre back against Shells again? Like he's not a centre back. Like, you know, I don't like he's played a full back, and I think that was just kind of make and do. So, you know, I feel really sorry for Declan Devine. He's a really good guy. Maybe he's better suited to being a number two, where he's had maybe more success than as a manager, certainly over a longer period of time. But I think that with him going, I don't know if it addresses all of Bo's problems, to be honest. I actually really don't think it does.
I think Gav, if he is an ex-Bo's player, or if there's some sort of, do you know what I mean? If there's some sort of relationship there with him, I think he definitely gets the extra time that he might have feel he was required there. I think the fact that he was a somewhat left field appointment and maybe an appointment that didn't get the pulses racing initially, you know, that's probably what's caught him a little bit as well. Look, as you say, I did my pro license with Deck. Deck is an absolute gent. He rang me in the off season. I like when managers do this. He rang me in the off season basically saying, look, we need to find, you know, to balance budget. He says, I'll be able to go after a few bigger ones, but we need to balance it by trying to find a few kind of rough diamonds then as well. And basically just said, can you give me an overview of what's in the first division? So he wanted, you know, a rundown of what maybe was floating under the radar in the first division and worth going after and that. So he was, you know, he was doing his homework. I really do what's the correct word here? I really do like when the manager doesn't go playing the blame game, and he absolutely can't be accused of that. You know, in recent weeks, he has stood up and pointed the finger nowhere other than directly at himself. No, you know, no throwing the players under the bus, no whinging about referees, no whinging about anything going on at boardroom level, anything like that, which I think he deserves credit for as well. And yeah, I think at in the off season, I would have thought there's discussions at boardroom level. Are we sticking with Declan for another year, or to start another season? Okay, we are. Is he starting the season under a little bit of pressure? Yes, maybe he is. But surely, you know, at the same time, we can't give him this budget and then make changes after 4 or 5. So if we're going with him, we're going to have to go with him for at least a dozen games or so. But then that hasn't proven to be the case.
It's an interesting one. You said there, Shane, that, you know, he was a bit of a left field appointment. It wasn't that so much that it was left field. He was actually an appointment who wasn't maybe first, second, possibly even third choice. Do you know what I mean? Initially, like those other people who were kind of, were there for it. Like, I remember, I was just trying to go through it earlier, because I remember writing the piece about this last May. Because you go back, like, he had a great start. Like, Bowles were top of the league, and you said it there about, you know, if their seasons were reversed in terms of how it went, they would have been going into this season a lot more positively. And that is part of the reason. I know we're saying it's early into this season and there's been overhaul, there is, but obviously there's no getting away from how the fact that missing out on Europe and how last season finished played a part. But like, you go back to it, like, he was obviously doing a bit of coaching and stuff with Letterkenny in the Ulster Senior League in September of 2022. Then he, within like the space of 6-7 months, he's in one of the biggest jobs in the League of Ireland. I know he was doing a bit of scouting, wasn't he, with Norwich City as well, for them. So it's just going to be interesting now from the point of view of Bowles. They've obviously took the decision over the weekend after Friday. I actually haven't had a chance to see Bowles play live yet. No, you did, Gav, didn't you? You were out there.
The Sligo game, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you've seen them live, so you've probably had a bit more of a sense. I can only go off some of the people I know in terms of at the club, and also what you kind of see in reaction to it on games. Not always the best place to judge it, but it does seem as if it's kind of been a pretty harsh kind of reaction to how this season has started. You know, like I don't know if that's maybe the point Shane makes. You know, maybe if someone had more of a link with Bowles, would there be a bit more patience? But I definitely feel as if last season has kind of carried on into this year as well.
I think the decision is definitely informed by poor form last season, just no real credit in the bank. And again, maybe he's unlucky in the sense that, you know, it's another FAI Cup final, which they feel like they haven't fully performed in. Definitely the performance in the final under Keith Long was better, but, you know, there is that sense that, oh, we've lost again, and that just saps energy. And I did that Sligo game in the opening night, and you are struck by the kind of pessimism and negativity around the club on, you know, like the first night of the season, everyone is still on 0 points. Anything can technically still happen. You should be at your most positive and optimistic there. And if that was Bowles fans at their most optimistic, then they're in for a very, very grim season. So, but I do feel like, you know, if making this decision this early in the season, having not made it at the end of last season, I don't know, it speaks to a certain panic there, or just a certain lack of kind of coolness.
I'm surprised as well, David, that another guy that I'd know quite well and have a decent relationship with, I'm surprised Gary Cronin wasn't appointed as the interim manager. I would have thought that, you know, considering you've got an assistant manager there who has done very, very well in his own right as a manager, I would have thought that was potentially the sideways move that I would have expected them to make to buy themselves a bit of time in their managerial search, with him possibly being given a chance to show what he could do in that interim period. So again, I'm not sure what the relationships are like in the background or what sort of conversations have gone on in the background. But it's a pity to see Gary gone as well, because, you know, some people might have raised eyebrows to see him willing to step away from a managerial role into an assistant manager role, but he was going from a part-time scenario into a full-time scenario, so that probably tempted him to a certain extent. But I mean, it's not just, you know, it's not just one guy here finding himself out of a job. It's two actually now, you know.
And the Gav kind of referenced it earlier, like, since Devine was appointed, Bowles also now have a director of football, which obviously is Pat Fennell, and he's coming in now as caretaker. Like, if you go back to it though, like a week or so before Devine got the job, it looked as if Alan Reynolds was going to have it. He was the one who Bowles had kind of hung their hat on, and he actually then turned the job down. Then Richard Dunne which is interesting enough. Like, he was another who was definitely in the mix for it. He withdrew from the process because you forget it was an actual, more so than the FAI maybe, where Bowes lead the FAI follow with their drawn out affairs. It was an actual drawn out affair to even replace, to replace Keith Long. And then like Ian Ryan, who's now actually Brabos, he had been kind of caught as well because he was kind of reasonably sought after when he was the work he was doing at Wexford. But then since then as well, and he, again going off social media and trying to get a bit of a steer on this, so far I haven't been able to, but the name that a few people have thrown out is Stephen Kenny. Do you know, like, about an actual a replacement, you would think, is that someone who they should be going to straight away to try and sound out and actually have a conversation with?
No brainer if they could get him, but can they get him? What do you think, Gav?
I think Kenny would be amazing for Bowes. I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I have no clue. Like, I have no insight into his thinking or anything, but I'd be surprised if he was... I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up back the League of Ireland at some point, but I'd be surprised if it happened this quickly. I genuinely can't speak to whether him and Fenlon have a great relationship. I guess, having been rivals for a long time in the League of Ireland, I guess probably not, but I don't know. And look, maybe these things can be, if there is an issue there, they can be parked for the benefit of all. I think he'd be an incredible appointment for Bowes. Oh yeah, like look how the squad is structured. You know, you've got great wide players, great like an encouraging centre forward there in Judge Steincourt. Like, the team is pretty well set up in midfield, like with Clark and James McManus. Like, okay, one of the stranger decisions, Devinus, I think McManus has been back playing with the under-20s lately, which is kind of curious because he's definitely good enough to play in the first team. Like, that team is really nicely set up for Stephen Kenny to take over, but I'd be surprised. Yeah, it does seem like it's going to be Alan Reynolds. Like, that's the name that's been linked. I do wonder if Bowes might be interested in Jim Crawford. I kind of got a sense that Pat Fenlon quite admires Crawford's work, but I don't know whether he's attainable. I would imagine that he'll want to stick with the Irish under-21s until the end of this campaign, but be interesting.
It's an interesting one. I'm going to just play just a little bit of audio here from after Dundalk's 1-0 defeat to St Pat's, and Stephen O'Donnell was discussing his own future at the club.
Of course, that's the feeling that's going to be amongst them, amongst supporters. I understand that. I don't think there's ever a question of our attitude. I don't think there's a question of the players' attitude tonight and how they went about it. Again, it's a confidence thing as well. You know, you go a goal behind after the couple of defeats. Players aren't robots. That all adds in. We just need to, as I said, I'm like a bro, stop just giving up such cheap goals. Like, you can't, off of seconds in midfield in their half, and a hook, speculative hook. So it's not possible for them to be basically through on goal off the back of that.
Do you, just last question, do you think that you have the confidence of the owner?
Yeah, I mean, like, I have a very good relationship with the owner, but again, I'm not really concerned. Whatever happens, me happens. I'm more concerned about tonight, about in regards where we go forward from here, in regards our team, in regards to personnel, and just quenching them soft goals, and then being slicker, being as slick as we can. I thought if we were a little bit slicker tonight, second half, it was on to play up through.
Stranger things have happened in football, Shane. Stephen O'Donnell.
The Bohemians.
Listen, I'm only asking the question. You can answer it. You've kind of given your surprise there.
Jesus, after you've come out of nowhere with that one for me.
Well, it's more so a sense of assessing where he's at now and what's happening with Dundalk, as well as Bowes as well. If Bowes are looking at a candidates list, would they look at him on it, or would they be looking at people who are out of work just from a cost point of view? Because you'd imagine it's going to cost them to obviously replace Devine and Cronin.
I would be absolutely stunned if that was one. I mean, You've mentioned one or two of the names there yourself. Look, Stephen, I would think, obviously, somebody at the club in Bohemians is going to pick up the phone and ring Stephen. There is no doubt about that. I mean, they'd be absolute fools not to. But I would be very surprised if he were to take that on, to be honest with you. Yeah, it makes sense that Rennie's name will be linked with it again. I don't know. I'd be surprised. I think Rennie could be quite happy, you know, at doing what he's doing. at the moment. After that, what other names are being bounced around? I have heard Ian Barraclough's name come into the equation again, whether he could be tempted back into the League of Ireland or not. Vinnie Peart's name has been bounced around a little bit, whether there'll be a conversation had there. Look, it's one, like, for, like, Gav has hit the nail on the head. Like, they shouldn't be, I think there is too much talent there for them to be struggling. And I think there is, if you know, a manager should be going in there excited by what he can do at the club. But it's also a really important appointment, David, because at this moment in time, going by the bookies' odds, they're third favourites to finish bottom of the table. Like, that's where they're at this moment in time. So they have to get this one right. Like, if they were to get this one wrong again and things continued or things didn't pick up, they could genuinely find themselves, along with Stephen O'Donnell and Dundalk, could genuinely find themselves, like...
So what do you think then, in terms of, is this an appointment where they have to say, right, you know what, this is just something to try and get someone in here now, we'll keep this in the league, almost like a bit of a short term one, rather than, and then just get almost, not, you can't be right, listen, it's a month into the season, you can't be looking at it from the point of view of, oh, we have to just survive now. Do you know what I mean? Like, surely they still look at this from a point of view of going for a manager who they see as building and taking them on, rather than, it's not like as if it's the last 2 months of the season, you know what I mean, or last month of the season where they just need to actually survive here. Now, obviously the league is a bit odd in the sense that it seems to be front loaded a little bit, you know what I mean, where you get a fair amount of games through early. That's probably why the decision was made even early, the fact that, like, the longer you leave it, the more games are going to be gone, you know. It's not, so there is that element to it as well, but I do think that surely it's not a case of, right, just get someone in who you know can survive, then probably clear the decks again in the summer or in the winter.
I would for me, the starting point of the conversation as to who the next Bowes manager would be is why would Pat Fenlon not actually just be the manager? If he has, you know, if he comes out post-match and, you know, over the weekend and expresses that, no, he has absolutely no interest in the job, well, then maybe, you know, okay, then we can rule him out. But at the moment, I would have thought he is the most likely candidate to be the manager in the, I was going to say, short to medium term, possibly beyond that. I would think that's where they look first and see how that... I don't think they'll be in a rush to appoint somebody within the next week or two. Like, I'd say they'd be quite happy there for him to tip away for a few weeks and see if he gets the grow back for it and decides that he would actually like to stay in the role.
Just on Stephen O'Donnell, I mean, he's now in a similar-ish situation to Declan Devine at Bowes in the sense that new ownership there and didn't appoint him. You know, obviously, I think there should be, at least anyway, much more credit in the bank among supporters of Dundalk towards O'Donnell than there was from Bohemian supporters towards Devine. But there is a real streak of realism in what O'Donnell is saying about the future and you know, his specific future, because obviously the results have been so bad. But whereas you know, the decision to sack Devine was hasty and unsurprising, I think any decision on O'Donnell in the next few weeks would be hasty and very, very surprising and potentially quite wrong.
In terms of hasty decisions that were taken, I was at that game on Friday between Dundalk and Pats. Both goalkeepers had been dropped from Monday's games.
Yeah.
Obviously, Georgie Shelby kind of seemed to be kind of... It seemed clear that he wasn't going to play, considering he was hooked at half-time. But he wasn't even in the squad. I think there was some suggestion that he might have been... Maybe he'd been injured. You take that at face value for what it is. But, like... Even just with Pats and Marcelo Pitaluga, obviously high profile coming in alone from Liverpool. And we spoke to him after the game, and he was up front, like, the piece is up for listeners who want to read it on the site today about just on John Daly saying, like, they're under no obligation that he has to play a certain amount of games or whatever. And it was like, it doesn't matter where you're coming from, what club you're coming from, if you're not performing, you're not going to play. And that's the decision he's taken. That obviously he referenced the President's Cup game where he wasn't great in that, and then obviously against Waterford he was poor enough as well. And yeah, just like bombed out. Maybe there was the suggestion that people were probably thinking, oh, he's going to have to play because he's on loan from Liverpool, but he's taken the decision, and Danny Rogers kind of keeps a clean sheet, and he's going to have the jersey for the game against Shells.
Yeah, and again, it's this was something that went on. Obviously, I was managing in the first division last year. It was astounding how many clubs started with one goalkeeper and ended up either with another goalkeeper or with multiple other goalkeepers, as was the case with one or two clubs. And like for me, it would take a hell of a lot for me to change my goalkeeper, to be honest with you. I have kind of always taken the approach of go absolutely all out for a guy that I see as unquestionably my number one. And then even if there's little shaky periods or sticky periods, sticking with him. But then, you know, because I take that approach with the number one, I then probably equally take that approach with the number two. I probably end up signing a number two who in my head I'm thinking, you know, is unlikely to play much and is really only there for emergencies. Whereas at Pats and Dundalk, maybe both managers feel, well, okay, he might be my number one, but my number two wouldn't be a huge amount huge distance behind him. And therefore, you know, it doesn't take a whole lot for him to think about a change. I just, you know, it's the one position for me that you really, really want assurance and consistency in. Yet a keeper can't be undroppable. I get that.
I just think Pats, I mean, it's no blueprint for consistent success at any level. Pats, they change their goalkeeper every year, you know, and obviously they've had successes in the past with Anang and definitely Yarosh coming from Liverpool, but you know, just because Yarosh was a success from Liverpool doesn't mean Pitaluga will as well. He may well end up being a success, but I also think that, you know, like, obviously, no, as John Daly says, Dave, that no one is mandated on loan to play a certain number of games. These are the reasons players go on loan, to kind of deal with these challenges and setbacks and see how they recover. Yeah. Pats, in fairness, have proved themselves an environment in which loan goalkeepers have improved and thrived in the past, which is there to the club's credit, I think. But it's tough, you know. I mean, Barry Murphy had a great thread on Twitter. I would urge everyone to read it about goalkeepers, young goalkeepers on loan in the League of Ireland, just how difficult it is. Like, he was engaging with a broader question of, do we have a kind of, is the quality of goalkeeper in the league this season very poor? And I don't think that's the case, to be honest. There's obviously been high profile mistakes, but so many of them are just so young and inexperienced. And there's a couple of interesting things that Barry makes the point, like, you know, being asked to play out from the back, maybe, you know, that's adding another complication to your job, you know, especially at a time when you're playing on unfamiliar pitches, in unfamiliar atmospheres, in an unfamiliar country, etc. Whereas, you know, like he would say, Conor Kearns has improved loads, but, you know, Kearns does, like, at Chels anyway, Kearns hasn't always had to build from the back. Like, I mean, they have been happy to go long. Maher, Derry, even to an extent, you know. So he was making the point that, you know, goalkeepers may benefit from being taken out of the limelight for a couple of weeks. They may also benefit from having a couple of weeks where you just kind of break things down a little bit more, or sorry, make things a little bit more simple. And he made one really interesting point, is that was why there are so many young, loany goalkeepers in the league, is because that's, especially the Dublin clubs, that's what they can afford because of the housing crisis. It's easier to find a young goalkeeper without a family, etc. You can put into a house share with other young players in your squad, whereas an older, more experienced keeper is likely to have a family or have someone to live with, and it's much harder to find them accommodation, which I thought was a really interesting insight. I'd urge everyone to read it on Twitter. It's really good.
Is there a question mark there as to why are we not? Well, I suppose at the very top end, obviously, we're kind of flush with goalkeepers in terms of our actual international number one. But goalkeepers, you know, young keepers in our league, it's not a huge amount of them playing in goal across the 20 teams at the moment, is there?
No, that's a good point. It's a good point, yeah. Well, if you look at, we kind of referenced it there, but say the top two at the moment, Shells and Derry, are they the two goalkeepers at the moment who are the best two in the country in terms of consistency and just maybe even just being established in terms of being around the league for a little bit? Brian Maher would be one, obviously, former, he's now, because he's now past the age grade for the under-21s. Established, knows the score around the league and all the rest of it, isn't going to be going anywhere thinking, right, I'm not sure what to expect here. Like, I was at the game, Derry and Rovers, and I think he probably should have saved Darragh Bourne's shot. When Darragh Bourne scored in that game, he kind of, maybe the fact that he took it early kind of caught him by surprise, but it kind of wriggled under his body. Damien Duff says Conor Kearns is the best goalkeeper in the country in terms of what he wants from him. But then you look at Rovers, and like, I know obviously it's kind of a bit of a repeat of what happened last year. Rovers having a few draws, not starting the season well, but they have now stuck with that. It's kind of a rare one actually what Rovers have done, where Leon Paul's estate is now the number one, having been the number two under Alan Manus. It's rare that actually happens. Do you know what I mean? Where a keeper will bide his time for that long and then be deemed worthy to be the number one. Do you know what I mean? And obviously it's your old pal, your old driving partner is there, the number two there.
Yeah, and look, I suppose 2 points I'd make on what you've said there is, on the Rovers situation, look, I have to be honest, like, my fear for Lee when Lee signed was, I've seen the old, like, managers pull this trick all the time, right? Where they sign a goalkeeper and tell him that they see him as the first choice goalkeeper, but they actually only ever see him as the second choice goalkeeper, and then a couple of weeks later they'll actually sign their first choice keeper. You see, what you don't want to do is sign a really strong first choice keeper and then nobody wants to come in as your number two because they're thinking, oh sure, he's nailed on, I'm not going to get in ahead of him.
Yeah.
So you actually sign your number two first, if that makes sense, with him falsely believing he might be number one before you sign the established number one.
This is actually the little known false one.
And yeah, there you are. And in Lee's case, what I was actually concerned with was that I thought, obviously Stephen had told him, look, I'm going to bring you in and it's, you know, Leon, I probably do see Leon as our first choice, but it's up to you to go and challenge him and try and take the jersey from him. And I'll be honest, in my head I was thinking, nah, he actually doesn't see either of them as number one. I think he's going to go out and sign a number one, and now Lee's going to be caught battling with Leon to be the sub keeper, and that he might actually not make match day squads. But no, he was true to his word. He did indeed see Leon as first choice, and it is up to Lee to battle for that one. Just going back to Brian Maher, when I was at Dundalk, and Brian was still at Pats, but obviously had a big reputation, but wasn't able to get in the first team at the time because he was still young and breaking through. Dundalk did make a fairly strong move for Brian Maher, and looked to bring him in, but it was under Filippo at the time, and basically Brian Maher's agent wanted a certain level of assurances that they saw Brian as first choice and was going to be guaranteed certain games. And because he wasn't given those assurances, he decided not to go to Dundalk, which, you know, I think it was a good move. I think it's a very good move. There's nothing worse for a young keeper than you've got potential, you're up and coming, and now a big club, you know, kind of bats its eyelids at you and off you go because the money is good and because you're going to be at a high level, but you're actually second choice. So I kind of respected his decision there to kind of turn that offer down. I think he went to Bray instead.
Yeah.
Where obviously he, you know, he'd ended brilliantly, which is fair play to him, I think.
So Thursday, John O'Shea will be naming his squad for the friendlies with Belgium and Switzerland. There may be an Ireland manager actually confirmed by then. We don't know. Don't know what's actually going to be happening. I'm guessing they're going to be waiting.
Christ, I hope so.
But I don't know, like, obviously it's clear that Mikey Johnson is now the best player in Europe at the moment. I was looking at, like, two goals again at the weekend. He's scoring some crackers. It just shows you, like, I know he's obviously nailed on to be in the squad, obviously fitting his permission. But it just shows you as well, before we get into maybe just chatting about who maybe want to be seen in the squad and who will come in, just what could happen in football. Do you know, where he's bombed out at Celtic, out with the cold, just can't get a run, and yet now he's in a team who are going to be, you would imagine, would be in a playoff spot and could potentially be in the Premier, could get to the Premier League.
When I'm inevitably the director of football of the FAI, one of my first moves will be to ban any Irish player from going to Celtic.
Perfect. Well, Liam Scales is not.
I mean, Liam's,
Adam Eda is
what
doing
Liam Scales is doing, what Scales and to a lesser extent Eda are doing at Celtic, these are historic achievements for an Irish player to excel at Celtic. It's been a complete graveyard. We'd see how well even like Boss and Lowell is doing now at League One in with Fleetwood on loan. And like, he cannot go back there. Do not go back to Celtic, because the pressure is there to win every week. So it's hard to break into the first team, because regardless of who the manager is at Celtic, they're under pressure to win every week. And then you're floating around the edge of the squad. You're not getting your game. And then if you're playing for the second team, that's the B team in that Highland League, which is honestly is not a level at which you can develop. I mean, I think it's widely regarded as you're way better off in the League of Ireland. You might be better off in the League of Ireland First Division. Like, it's such a poor quality level. And we see that Johnston has now got out of Celtic and is thriving at West Brom. It's actually great, like, you know. So, I mean, yeah. And even, like, Johnny Kenny back at Rovers now. I think Johnny Kenny could have gone to Hibs rather than Celtic. Hibs would have been a much better move for him, you know. So, yeah, that would be my first decision when I'm running Irish football.
Shane, have you booked your tattoo removal? Shane?
Well, there's a Bonner fella from Donegal that used to play in goal a few years ago.
That's a long time ago. Obviously, when I'm director of football at the FAI, I will be working closely with Paddy Bonner. So I'd make that clear to him that I'm talking about, you know, the current generation. You know, I mean, ever since, like, you know, since the expansion of the Champions League, I think that's pretty fair. You know, I mean, honestly, like, name. In the last 20, since Roy Keane went to Celtic, injury stopped him from making an impact, really. Name the Irish players that have thrived at Celtic.
You're right.
Aidan McGeady.
Actually, yeah, fair play. McGeady and Scales.
Yeah. And McGeady obviously is a slightly different story, obviously, because he didn't come up through our system, if that makes sense. So, like, we're kind of looking at, you know, fellas who come up through our system and have flourished by going across, which no doubt Scales is definitely in that bracket at the moment. But he's, yeah, there's been a lot more failures than there has been successes by going that route. That's for sure. But no, look, David, he's absolutely flying. I was looking again, you've probably seen some of the numbers. Like, he's taken, since he signed for the club, he's taken 11 shots. 6 of them have flown into the back of the net. That's some conversion rate. So it is. And look, again, similar to centre forwards, it's centre forwards and direct wingers are the two positions that the players thrive on. Probably the manager and the fan bases love more so than any other positions. A centre half is kind of too hardy and to care about opinions about him, and your whole midfielders are always trustworthy fellas, but a centre forward and wingers, they need to feel the love. And look, I think he's getting the love from the manager. He's certainly getting it from the crowd, the way things have started from him. Like, the goals are not, like, almost every goal has been a cracker as well. Like, do you know what I mean? These aren't arriving at the back post tap-ins or anything like that. They've all been fantastic goals. And like, he was getting a lot of, he was getting a lot of stick from the fan base at Celtic. He really was. They had kind of wrote him off as a show pony who had kind of no end product. And look, he's just a different man. He's been a completely different man since signing there. He is absolutely flying. There's no doubt about it. But listen, it's still a relatively short enough period. For me, he needs to,
stay fit.
He needs to stay fit. Yeah, that's definitely worked against him. If he stays fit, you'd like to think that he can continue to show that form. I would love to see him, you know, get 6 to 12 months injury free, consistently showing that form, and then you're really, really getting excited. Example being somebody who has stayed injury free. Not that I don't think injuries were as much of an issue, but certainly maintaining form long time. And I'm proud to say I've been shouting his name from the rooftops since before most. But like, Sam Smodix is. David, I'm telling you, he is some player.
He's made 20 odd goals now, 22 goals or something like that.
But it's all round. I've seen them maybe half a dozen times over the last 6 months or that, there or thereabouts. And every time he's so impressive. His all round game is really, really good. And look, I know there's all these question marks over, well, does, you know, is he buying into the whole thing and does he want to be there and all that kind of thing. But for me, I just think we need to, I think a manager needs to, again, show him the love, put the arm around him, make him feel important. You know, yeah. I'm a 3-5-2 man at heart myself anyway, so it's no surprise probably that I would be arguing that I'd love to see us go. I'd love to see us go 3-5-2, and I'd love to see him play up top. Not to completely, like, just shove Adam Ida into the background or anything, but I would love to see a Smodix Ferguson front two to see how it would work out. Now, the problem with 3-5-2 is where the hell Mikey Johnston goes into that.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've had enough of back three now. I mean, let's move on. I mean, we've got, like, suddenly, in fairness, like, Stephen Kenny has actually built a pretty good squad there. Obviously, it didn't work out for him, but, like, we're looking fairly stacked now in terms of attackers and wingers, like you say, like Ida, Ferguson. Like, I'd be amazed if Troy Parrott gets in the squad, to be honest. We've got wide players that we didn't have before.
He's picked up an injury as well.
Benny. Oh, right, there you go. Well, definitely be surprised. So, but we've got Benny now and Johnston and We may have Casey McAteer from, like, I mean, we do need an update on that. John O'Shea will hopefully provide us one on Thursday as regards his recruitment. So it's looking pretty good. I mean, we're kind of, okay, we might be a little bit light in fullback areas, to be honest, but it's hardly a crisis. We've obviously got a goalkeeper situation, the envy of Europe. We've loads of good centre halves. It's just the midfields. The midfield is the problem. Like, you know, if you go 4-2-3-1, I think that's a pretty cool front four of Johnston, Ogbene, Smodix and Ferguson, to be honest. Or if you want to take Ferguson out of the firing line, play Ida because he's in better form and we'll give Ferguson a bit of a break, which might not be the worst thing in the world. But it's just like that midfield duo is going to be lightweight, I think, to be honest. And that's why I would actually, it would be scarcely deserved and it would be ahead of time, but I would actually call up Lowell and get a
get a look at him.
Yeah, he's been playing defensive mid for Fleetwood as far as I know, which is good. He had been at centre back. We can't have these guys playing centre back. We've got enough centre backs. Play somewhere else, please. Like Jimmy Dunn is playing at right back now for QPR, which is much better for his international prospects than sticking at centre back. So I'd actually, now look, it's a different dynamic for O'Shea because he's not the permanent manager. So if you had the permanent manager in there, it would be a more beneficial exercise. But if O'Shea's going to stick around on the ticket for the next manager, which I think is more likely than not, I'd call up Lowell and just see how he does, because he has characteristics and a profile in midfield that we desperately need. And if we get a bit more physicality and robustness into midfield with that front line, you know, you can cause problems.
I don't know. I look, that as a front four, that definitely does sound attractive. All right, Gav. But I suppose the two questions I'd have on that is, you've said we have a bit of a problem with fullbacks. And then the big one for me is that's essentially just leaving us with two out and out centre midfielders. I don't think we can get away with two out and out centre midfielders. I think we have to have three bodies in there. And it's a pity we're not playing a shite country as one of the two games, because if we were playing, no, it is though, because like you probably can't get away with a Benet right wing back and Mikey Johnson left wing back against a Belgium. Whereas like if we were playing, you know, somebody shite, like imagine having Mikey Johnson left wing back, a Benet right wing back, Smodix and Ferguson as your front two. Now you're still able to go with three out and out centre midfielders and you're still able to go with three centre halves. I'd absolutely love to see that. But yeah, we're probably going to be on the back foot a little bit too much to chance somebody like Mikey Johnson in particular at left wing back against somebody against Belgium. But we'll see.
That's actually, it's a shame that that's not like the FAI's marketing strategy for these games. It's a shame we're not playing someone shit. But I wonder though as well, because like, say they're friendly, so it's not as if, like, bring lads in, so I want you to mention earlier with Sammy Smodix, and I know, like, he's on the record, isn't he, saying that he's going to be playing for Ireland. I know he qualifies for Hungary, actually, as well. But, like, he's on the record as saying that wants to play for Ireland. Now, naturally, because of, he had to pull out of the last squad, because obviously, I think it wasn't his partner, was pregnant, and I think she was going into labour. And then I think he was injured, he had to pull out of a squad before that. There's the Cannon situation as well with England and all the rest of it. You mentioned, reference there, Gav, about McAteer. That was someone who Kenny kind of had been chasing down. But obviously they're friendly games, but also when you've got an interim manager, like if you would imagine, if there's any doubts about lads wanting to really be involved and not made a decision, they'll probably just bide their time until it's the actual full-time manager. It's the actual manager who can say to them, yeah, no, listen, I definitely want you, and this is going to be part of the plan, because it's still short terms, like two games, you know?
That's the problem with how long this managerial chase has gone on. I mean, like, the general reaction to, like, what's the rush here, you know? Like, even Mark Hannum, in kind of exquisite understatement, said the other day that speed is not one of the metrics by which we measure success in this chase. And you're like, yeah, no shit. Like,
good when you get to set out your own metrics, isn't it?
But I think, like, international football is a war. It's a war for talent. Like, we've lost it too often. I mean, okay, let's not mention them, actually. But, I mean, we need... I mean, that's how this is kind of being squandered. And you'd hope that O'Shea is kind of definitely on the ticket from now on, so he can kind of go to Smodix and say, well, look, or go to Tom Cannon, or go to Casey McAteer, go to any number of the other guys who can qualify for Ireland and may not get a look into the England squad, and say, look, you're going to be in our plans because I'm going to be there regardless. Okay, I might not be the top guy, but I'll be number two. You'll definitely be in our plans. So maybe you can offset it that way. But that's why they needed a permanent manager in by now, you know, to go to Cannon to say, you're definitely in our plans, because Cannon may not be like an international standard striker, but the signs are he probably will be. He won't start for England, but he might be good enough to start for Ireland. Like, let's be honest here. I know I'm talking about our better options there, but we're not good enough to write off talent and let guys slip through our fingers. We're not.
And this crack of, if the player isn't dying to play for us and isn't, you know, the one busting the gut to want to pull on the jersey, that we shouldn't be interested in him. I don't buy into that at all.
I couldn't give a shit. Yeah, that's nonsense.
It's a load of shit, because the ones that we associate with, oh, look at how proud he was to play for Ireland, like Cascarinos, Aldridges, McAteers, these kind of guys. Yeah, they became really proud to play for Ireland after they started to play for Ireland. Okay, so we need to get them into a jersey and playing games, and then they'll develop a massive love for the jersey and for the fans and everybody, I guarantee you. But, like, we need, in my opinion, in some of these cases, we absolutely need to be the ones who are aggressively making the first move.
Well, that brings us on to a little bit of Premier League chat, which is nice to talk about, and top of the table Premier League chat. What are the odds of Queevy and Kelleher picking up a knock before those squads, considering he's probably going to be England, Liverpool's number one goalkeeper for the rest of this title running?
I'd be surprised. I'm sure he's very eager to get over and prove himself as Ireland's number one. Again, it's a friend.
He's probably going to be, isn't he? You imagine if he is coming over, he has to be the goalkeeper. Bazunu has done well, but like,
yeah, I think it was right that Bazunu has been number one to now, because he's been playing every week. And if there's a spell where Kelleher is back on the Liverpool bench, I think then if Bazunu keeps on playing, I think he deserves to be number one. But, you know, look at the standard that Keller is playing at now at the moment. It's outstanding. So look, because it's a friendly game, you might see a rotation at goalkeeper between the two games. You can do that. And O'Shea's not going to be the permanent manager, as we know. So again, we'll do stories and we'll do a chat as to who should be Ireland's number one. I don't know how much of an indication these games really will be. But on form, Keller has been outstanding, and was outstanding against Manchester City again. Was he a little bit too slow to come across to the opening goal? Maybe. I don't think so. I think he was pretty unlucky not to keep it out. Had he got another 6 inches to his left, he might actually have kept it out. It might have hit kind of slightly more the front of his left rib cage. But I actually think, you know, like Carragher's way of praising Queevy and Kelleher has been, it's as if Alisson has been in goals. And in many ways it has been, because he's made the saves that he's had to, and made a few saves that he had no right to make, to be honest, across not necessarily against City, but across this run in the team. I actually think he's better on the ball. And Liverpool's second half against City was notable, because anytime Liverpool beat City, especially at Anfield, we always talk about the amazing Anfield atmosphere and the intensity and the pressing and their discomforting City. Liverpool outplayed City yesterday. Like they passed their way through City's midfield. Like Alexis McAllister, an amazing player. But Keller helps that, because he's better on the ball than Alisson, I think. He's more naturally two-footed. Alisson, when he has no left foot, so as to kind of make these kind of awkward outside-of-the-foot passes off his right foot, which may be why he keeps getting injured. And there has been a couple of high-profile Liverpool City games in which Alisson has kicked the ball directly to City players from which they've scored. That's how they beat them at Anfield in the COVID game a few years ago. And he got away with one or two in the league game at the Etihad earlier on this season. And Liverpool got their way back into that game after a very ropey opening 10 or 15 minutes by passing the ball a bit more. And Keller helps that, because he's so comfortable. And I do not know how, especially goalkeepers, are so cool in these situations and can trust their technique so much. He's happy to let Haaland press him, and then to open up a pass to either one of the centre-backs to his left or right, or to Endo dropping off through the middle. And he can pass it off either foot. So I thought that Liverpool performance spoke a lot to how different the team plays now as opposed to Liverpool 1.0. And I think Kelleher may actually be slightly better suited to it than Alisson.
I don't know. Like, do you know what, right? I don't know why you sometimes say, oh, you're... I don't know. This is probably going to sound so stupid. Like, I still feel as if Keller has to kind of like fill out or something. He still does look... He doesn't look that imposing as a goalkeeper. Maybe that's changing in terms of what's needed change. I don't know what in terms of... But, like, I look at him and I still feel as if, and maybe that kind of actually will come maybe with games and all the rest of it, but I kind of still feel as if he doesn't have a bit of filling out to do or something. That's what, just looking at him like.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair enough comment. He isn't physically the biggest fella, but yet he manages to spread himself absolutely fantastically. Like, he really, really does. Like, you think of that Phil Foden chance at the near post. And
yeah,
like,
that was a great save.
Yeah, and my instinct at first was, it's a great save, but Foden kind of has to score from there. And then when you see it slowed down, by the time Foden was making contact with the ball, there was no other outcome. Like, there was no part of Kelleher it could have got past. He had spread himself so well. I mean, you always revert back to Peter Schmeichel when you're talking about goalkeepers who spread themselves well. Kelleher is outstanding at the way he spreads his body, as you say, for a body that's still not the biggest body in the world.
I don't know if you watched the game on Sky, but I thought Daniel Sturridge's analysis of that was actually pretty good in the sense of how the angle that Kelleher comes at. Sometimes you expect the goalkeeper to come out almost straight and maybe you spread and you put through the legs, but you kind of said that he makes himself bigger by coming out at more of an angle, almost diagonally.
I didn't see that, but he does. I don't know, there's almost a... Maybe is the lack of size, right? Does it actually work in his favour a little bit more in that there seems to be an elasticness about his body that allows him to manipulate the shape of his body extremely well, that normally there's a gap between the keeper's legs that you can squeeze it through, or there's... But whatever way he manages to do it, as I say, that elasticness means he manages to cover it. Look, I've been so impressed with him. I keep waiting for, you know, something to happen that kind of, you know, halts the speed of his progress a little bit. And I would be a major Gavin Bazuna fan, and I would have said, you know, even up till 2 weeks ago, I still would have said that I would have thought Gav has to start the next game, but it's just every game. He's literally in contention for man of the match in almost every game he plays. It's ridiculous. And look, I suppose aside from him, I thought it was such an enjoyable game. It really, really was such an enjoyable game. And for all the attacking quality on the field, you know, it was interesting that for me, I would have been choosing between two or three defensive players as man of the match. And that's why the scoreline for me was 1-1 rather than bloody 2-2 or 3-3, because, you know, Van Dijk is just back to the player that he was. He's the best centre half in the world, is the simplest way of putting it. I still feel...
But do you say that right, Shane? Sorry, I'm going to cut across you really quickly. If it was not for Kelleher, you could say Haaland showed Van Dijk up a little bit with that run. Like, Haaland gets onto his left foot and he just doesn't have a good enough shot, and it's a save. Do you know what I mean? In that game, I agree with you in the sense of Van Dijk, clearly, but like, so this is we're talking about margins, where if Haaland scores that chance, which I think the majority of times he was, because he's on his favourite foot and he has enough space to get the shot away. No?
Not having it, not for a minute. If I've got a centre back, if I've got any defender in a 1v1 situation with half a field, like an attacker... If an attacker is 1v1 with a defender with half a field in front of him to work with.
Yeah.
Like, odds are in favour of the attacker here, in my opinion. And as the defender, I'm kind of saying to him, listen, your job here is that when the shot comes at where the odds are in our keeper's favour.
Right.
And I felt as Haaland was striking that ball, the odds were in Kelleher's favour.
Right,
I think Van Dijk was making him shoot from far enough out and from an angle that you'd be backing your keeper to be able to save from there. I do.
Yeah, that's a brilliant way of phrasing it, Shane. I agree with you. I think that, you know, traditionally, as I would have understood football, it was just like the defender's job is make sure he doesn't get his shot off. Make sure you get a block there. Whereas Van Dijk's very different. I mean, there are times when he's just like, you know, because sometimes you'd be baffled by how he stands off. There was a moment in the first half where I think he stood off Foden for ages and maybe a little bit too long, but basically they've calculated, I think, that basically, you know, it's a kind of a certain use of XG or something where if I let him take this shot, I'll try and force him wide, etc. But if I let them take this long range shot, chances are our keeper will save it. And it's more likely, and I might as well let it go cleanly through to him, because the worst thing that can happen is it takes a nick off me and goes in. That's what happened to Trossard scored the third goal against them at the Etihad, when through Alisson's legs. If it didn't take a nick off Van Dijk, I think Alisson, okay, not as good as Kelleher, as we've all established, but Alisson would probably have saved it. Yeah. I thought Van Dijk was unreal. You know, it's actually, you know, in the City, and I love watching him in these City games, because he's stretched and stressed in those games, and it's the only time you ever see him dive in. You never see him go to ground, but he has to against City because they stretch him so much. And just how clean all of his tackles were in the penalty area. There was one recovery run in the second half that he just like stretched out a leg in and around the City player. I thought he was outstanding. I thought Kwanzaa did pretty well. I thought Akanji was actually pretty good for City. Surprising to see him in instead of Diaz, but I thought he was actually pretty good. But I thought Van Dijk got man of the match. I think fair enough, but McAllister would have been my pick. Obviously, he scores the penalty after taking 40 minute wait to take the penalty. Should obviously have had a second one. Like, what the hell? And I just think he is absolute quality. And he's a bit of Irish in him, obviously. I do remember a deathless line from one of the newspapers on the day after the World Cup final that Donna Bates was the place to be rather than fucking Buenos Aires. But he's obviously the player that we never produce. But
the one you probably haven't touched on there, Gav, is as for me, as good and all as the Haaland Van Dijk battle was, I actually think it was eclipsed by Luis Diaz versus Kyle Walker. I thought that was an incredibly exciting battle.
Oh, I didn't think it was a battle. I thought Diaz won it.
I thought Kyle Walker had two of the most outstanding moments in the game. I thought he put in two tackles that were nailed on goals. If he had,
there was one on Salah where he comes in, actually, that Salah basically takes a dive after from Ake. I think that was a great moment. But I thought Diaz actually destroyed them. You know, and Diaz should have won the game. Like that, this is the problem. I said on last week's pod that I thought Liverpool needed to win the league, and if they, sorry, needed to beat City to win the league. Their performance was so good, you'd actually give them encouragement. It'll encourage them that they can actually win their last 10 games, and if they do that, I think they'll win the league. But I think they'll regret not doing it.
The way you've both spoken there in such glowing terms, like it's clear that both teams are going to be worthy runners-up and tour place to Arsenal, which is going to be...
Arsenal could do it, man. I really think they could. I think there's a little bit too much made of the psychological breakdown last year, that they bottled it in some way. I think the reason they didn't win the league last year is because they had to play Rob Holding at centre back in massive games, including the one away to City. No such problems now. Declan Rice has been reinvented as a kind of a goal scoring number 8, like his presumed hero Frank Lampard. City Arsenal at the end of March is going to be another epic. This title race is absolutely fascinating, and I think Liverpool's best hope from this point out is some kind of mutually assured destruction between them. Let them hope, like, for Liverpool's point of view, let them draw in the Premier League, and let them draw each other in the Champions League. Like, a two-legged quarterfinal, semi-final game between those two sides means they might drop points in the league, and Liverpool, who I know the final's in Dublin, I think it's time to sack off the Europa League now. Like, I mean, it was the Europa League that cost Arsenal last year, because that's where Saliba and Tomiyasu got injured. Kanata got injured for them on Thursday night as well.
And on that, Gav, do you know, I'll tell you one thing that both Klopp and Pep Guardiola are desperately going to be praying for is that Arsenal turn around the game tonight.
Yeah.
Like that, or tomorrow night. That's huge. Like, if Arsenal go out of the Champions League tomorrow night, I think then they become favourites to win the Premier League. For me, at the moment, I think, you know, if they are still trying to juggle on both fronts, I think it certainly would become a bit more difficult, and I'd probably still just about stick with City. But I think if they're only concentrating on one thing from here on in, I think Guardiola and Klopp desperately need an Arsenal comeback against Porto tomorrow night.
Can I make one last overreaction hot take on Liverpool City, and I'm interested in Shane's view on this. It's the first time I've looked at that. I'm interested in your views as well. Sorry. It's the first time I think I've watched City and I felt these guys look a bit old. That six of that City team made their debuts for the club before Guardiola won his first league title, that 100-point season. Walker, Ederson and Bernardo were signed just before that season. The worst I've seen Rodri play in a while. The worst I've seen Bernardo Silva ever play in one of those big games. I disagree with you. I thought Kyle Walker was actually kind of pretty poor. I don't know. Like, I feel like there's something a little bit more vulnerable about them this year than there was last year.
De Bruyne had his old man hissy fit as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an interesting element to it as well. Like, that
the wheels are falling off.
Like, I don't know. I think they'll come back on fairly quickly. Yeah. Yeah, I get where you're coming from. Was it a below par performance because Liverpool were so good, or was it signs of age? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see over the next few months. I think it's got to the stage now where I think the ideal Champions League final, let's be honest, is probably any two of the three Premier League sides, because to me they are the superpowers at this stage. I just think they're above anything else. Maybe Bayern, Real, you know, they would probably disagree with that. But I think Kyle Walker is the best right full in world football.
Oh, Rodri is the best full midfield.
I do, yeah.
What?
I do, absolutely. He is the only, and it's why I think...
He's not the best drummer in the band. He's not the best right full back in England.
If
you're picking the England team... At the Euros.
Hold on.
You've got Reece James and you've got Trent Alexander-Arnold ahead of him, at least. You have Ben White ahead of him. Ben White's better.
Who is the only player who could match up and handle Kylian Mbappe is Kyle Walker.
Seamus Coleman did it. Seamus Coleman might be better than him in the Premier League.
Nah. I'm taking him all day. No.
What about Pedro Porro?
Pedro Porro is better than him. He is,
nah.
David.
Nah.
Walker's got great recovery.
Listen,
pace,
come here.
But
Gav, don't be too harsh on Walker. Like, yesterday was a very busy day.
Go on. I'm lost. Oh, yes. All right. I was a little bit slow on the uptake there. Sorry.
We're talking there about Arsenal going out of Europe, and that maybe makes them favourites. But even with Liverpool, like, it's a big week. Obviously, they'll go through in the Europa League. But then there's the St. Patrick's Day derby on Sunday with United in the FA Cup.
Yeah, you're going to it.
Really?
Yeah, that's exciting. I mean, I also think Liverpool should maybe sack this off as well if they want to win the league. But
100% agree. 100%.
I don't see... from a neutral's point of view, you'd love Man City-Liverpool... FA Cup final, just like Klopp's final game, to kind of decide a winner, even though Man City have beaten them far more often than he's beaten them. It'd be interesting. Like, I mean, I don't know what Liverpool team will line out, but I don't know. United obviously beat Everton, but conceding 20-odd shots, like, this is unsustainable, this run of form.
I also feel that I can't allow you to get away without noticing, because you've completely dismissed me so much there. How the hell did Kyle Walker manage to get named at right back in the UEFA and FIFA Team of the Year last year if he's fifth? What's he down to? Fifth or sixth best right back in the Premier League, according to you there, was it?
It's the halo effect of the Man City team. Like, was given one job by Gareth Southgate at the World Cup, Mark Kylian Mbappe, and then off he went, sallying forth over the halfway line, let Mbappe counter, and Tchouaméni scored the opening goal, and Southgate went absolutely spare.
But Guardiola has
and he's real fast.
Like, he obviously has more about him than just maybe he's. I know what you mean. I think he's still deadly. Like, I'll be honest.
He's still good, but like the best right back in world football. I mean,
yeah,
Christ alive.
For me, definitely. If he'd be. I'd pick the right back based on their defensive, particularly in their system. Like, that's the other thing is, name another player who would allow that system to work as well as it does in that. Like, you can't play the way Man City play if you swap Kyle Walker for Pedro Porro, for Trent Alexander-Arnold, a defender who's happy to stay at home and defend in a back three while John Stones wanders on into midfield. Not going to happen.
But that doesn't make him the best. It might make him the best right back for Man City, but it does make him the best right back in the world.
I feel this could be a back and forth that will just keep on going. And you each have your own points, and there could be something that we can talk about next week about it that you can add to the discourse. But until then, I think it's a perfect time to call it a day.
Cheers.
Great stuff.